It was happening just as Jacob Marley had said it would. The second of the three spirits had arrived, and with him visions of victuals that would make Scrooge marvel. Heaped up on the floor to form a kind of throne were turkeys, geese, game, poultry, brawn, great joints of meat, suckling pigs, long wreaths of sausages, mince pies, plum puddings, barrels of oysters, red hot chestnuts, cherry-cheeked apples, juicy oranges, luscious pears, immense 12th cakes, and seething bowls of punch. And then, from his own room, Scrooge was out upon the town, for the people who were shoveling away on housetops were jovial and full of glee, calling out to one another from the parapets, and now and then exchanging a facetious snowball, better-natured missile far than many a wordy jest, laughing heartily if it went right, and not less heartily if it went wrong. The poulterers' shops were still half open, and the fruiterers were radiant in their glory. The grocers, oh, the grocers, nearly closed, with perhaps two shutters down, or one. But through those gaps, such glimpses. It was not alone that the scales descending on the counter made a merry sound, or that the twine and roller parted company so briskly, or that the canisters were rattled up and down like juggling tricks, or even that the blended scents of tea and coffee were so grateful to the nose, or even that the raisins were so plentiful and rare, the almonds so extremely white, the sticks of cinnamon so long and straight, the other spices so delicious, the candied fruits so caked and spotted with molten sugar as to make the coldest lookers-on feel faint and subsequently bilious. Nor was it that the figs were moist and pulpy, or that the French plums blushed in modest tartness from their highly decorated boxes, or that everything was good to eat and in its Christmas dress. But the customers were all so hurried and so eager in the hopeful promise of the day that they tumbled up against each other at the door, clashing their wicker baskets wildly, and left their purchases upon the counter and came running back to fetch them, and committed hundreds of the like mistakes in the best humor possible, while the grocer and his people were so frank and fresh that the polished hearts with which they fastened their aprons behind might have been their own, worn outside for general inspection, and for Christmas daws to peck at if they chose. That from Stave 3, the second of the three spirits, from A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens. And, speaking of grocers, we can only imagine what it was like at Charity's grocery store at the corner of Sanderson and Grove Streets, right here in Troop, outside of Scranton, at Christmas time, where Mr. Charity prepared with such care the succulent roasts, the specially seasoned sausages, for his friends and neighbors and regular customers, and so much more. And it's just that sort of juxtaposition of the old world and the new that makes this production of A Christmas Carol so intriguing and so inviting. Clock Tower Theatre Company will present an adaptation of Dickens' classic tale this weekend, December 8th, 9th, 10th, and 11th, at the Theatre at North in Scranton, with an ensemble, many of whom have been living and working with this version of the story for decades. Brad Morgan is founder and managing director of Clock Tower Theatre. He is taking the role of Jacob Marley in this production and directing as well. He has worked for years with Bernard Burak Charity, who has come back to northeastern Pennsylvania to play the role of Scrooge. As we'll learn, Brad and Bernie have a real passion for this piece, and they stopped in at the WVIA studios to talk with us about A Christmas Carol and their ties to the region. Brad Morgan.
I was born and raised in Scranton my whole life. Till about 1987, moved to New York, spent some time in New York, then went to graduate school in Binghamton, got a master's in acting there. That's where I met Bernie. We did our first play together in 1991, Biloxi Blues, at a theater called the Cider Mill Playhouse. Left Binghamton, moved to Chicago for several years, and then moved back to Scranton. And most of my theater activity since I moved back to Scranton, I think around the year 2000, has been in New York and upstate New York and Cider Mill Playhouse. Prior to that, of course, went in high school and college at Marywood University.
And you have local ties too, Bernie, to Troupe.
I remember the day that Brad told us where we were rehearsing at the Penn State Worthington campus. And when I looked on a map, discovered it was almost just a stone's throw from where my parents owned and ran a corner grocery store and deli. My dad was a butcher. My mom ran the store. It was at the corner of George and Sanderson Streets. This is long before I was born. I believe they moved to Binghamton in about 1943 or thereabouts. So they had been there for at least a good decade. And there was another store, apparently, I learned this from my brother over the Thanksgiving table the other day, that another store was at Dunmore and Center Streets in Troop. And I'd been back. I have an older brother who's since passed away, who was about 18 when the family moved from Troop to Binghamton. And it was important for him to sort of visit his ghosts, speaking of Christmas Carol, to come back. And he wanted me to know, you know, things that I wouldn't have known because I didn't live here. There's a cemetery at Sanderson Street where I have two much older brothers who were buried as infants. They died in infancy and had no idea. And he took me to their unmarked grave on a family plot of my mother's, from my mother's side of the family, the Buracks. So those of you who are listening, if you know the Burack family, I'm a Burack. I'm half a Burack and half a Charity.
We know that the clock plays a prominent role in Dickens' A Christmas Carol. The clock strikes one and the ghost appears. What are you hoping to do with Clock Tower Productions, Brad?
Well, like I said, I haven't been really acting in the area for a while for two reasons. Primarily, most of the theater groups don't pay their actors. And at some point, after I went away to graduate school, I kind of decided that I was going to just get paid. I wasn't going to volunteer my services any longer. So I've been working out of the area, and it's always been a goal of mine to come and establish a company here and pay the staff, including the actors. And this opportunity just kind of fell into place this year, and it kind of just took off from there. So I hope to establish a company where we can get some local and actors that are professionals from New York and other areas to come down and work side by side and get paid for their services.
And you chose to do this inaugural effort with A Christmas Carol. How so?
Well, I had been involved, as I said, with the Cider Mill Playhouse in Endicott, New York, since I went to grad school up in that area.
He's big modest, by the way. He got it not just his master's, but his Master of Fine Arts.
Thanks, Bernie.
Yes.
So I had been involved up there with that company since 1990, and they have been producing A Christmas Carol since the theater opened. Bernie was a member of that first cast.
We first opened the show in 1979, and I performed for a straight decade up to 1989 when I left for graduate school to earn my own MFA.
So they developed this concept in this show there, written by this group of actors that formed that company. I didn't join till later. I think my first year was 1993. I was in for a few years, out for a few years, in for a few years, different roles, different parts. Total of about 15 seasons doing the production. And last year, the board of directors announced that they weren't going to do this version anymore after 30-some years of doing it. And at that point, it kind of went, this might be the opportunity to bring it to Scranton. A couple other things fell into place, including the script and the set, both from the original production, and kind of just snowballed from there. So I've been getting a lot of emails, Facebook inquiries from people in that area who had bringing generations of family members to see that show, and they were kind of not happy they were doing it up there and very happy that we're doing it down here. So people are traveling as far as Syracuse so far to see this show, bringing their family members.
And there is something about this story in Dickens' telling that you could imagine inspiring such loyalty.
In particularly in our production, which is an adaptation of the original novella, and it's sort of a play within a play, if I can set it up. We are in the attic bedroom of an old Victorian house in some city, we don't know where. Could be Scranton, could be Troop. And we see a couple of the actors from a production of A Christmas Carol rehearsing a musical number with someone who's on a keyboard in the corner of this child's bedroom. And we may not notice at first, but there's a child in the bed who is apparently sick. The sitter arrives, played by Laurie Brerley. Her name is Mrs. Cooper in the production. And we learned very quickly that this company of actors, many of whom are on their way to drop by for drinks and cookies before they have a run-through before their evening performance, the child was promised to attend this particular performance. And because the child hasn't recovered entirely from I should say, his or her, because we've had both male and female children playing in this role, the child is really disappointed, just crushed. And as the actors arrive and find their way up to this attic bedroom, we learn the story of what's going on, and we feel bad for the kid. And in the process of just sort of screwing around and having some fun in this child's bedroom, which is lined by the eaves of this house, and it's an attic full of stuff, full of junk and toys and old clothes. And the idea occurs to someone that if we just could skip our run-through, maybe we can put the show on for the kid. And my character observes, well, it'd be great to do that, but we don't even have the whole cast here. And then somebody says, well, we'll double up on the parts. We know everybody's parts. We can just do it for the kid. So this very spontaneous sort of makeshift pull anything out of the closet and put it on your head and you're a different character happens. And I remember when we were first conceived of this back in Binghamton in Endicott, where the Cider Mill Playhouse is. It was their first attempt at a Christmas show. And John Bielenberg, who was the chairman of the department at the time and who was, in fact, the nominal author of our production, our adaptation, we kind of workshopped it for a while, sort of messed around, did some readings, tried to decide which scenes were better than others and the most adaptable. And John finally came back with a script with this prologue of these actors arriving at the house. And I remember 3 days before we opened, several of us went out for drinks, and we honestly didn't know if we were in the biggest turkey that we'd ever signed on to. We just didn't know how it would play. But we were giving it our best, and on opening night, we had sustained applause, a standing ovation. The audience absolutely loved it, and we've kept it up. You know, it turned into I think that season we did something like 28 performances. I mean, we were cranking it out. We had to add another week of shows just to accommodate it, and that was a 300-seat house. So it was a cabaret-style theater, so it was a very festive environment, and it was perfect for this show. And in fact, it became a mainstay at the Cider Mill Playhouse for, I believe, 37 or 38 seasons.
Yeah.
And Brad, I've done 10 seasons of it. Brad has done as many as 15.
Yeah.
There's a slew of actors who've come through the Binghamton University Theater Department community or the local actors, some terrific local actors in Binghamton, Klaus Evans, Bill Gorman. Lori is back to do Mrs. Cooper. She was never in the production before, but she's an old Cider Mill veteran. And it's sort of a homecoming for us. Bill and Klaus are coming down from Binghamton to help us celebrate on opening night at Clock Towers production. And it just feels like, it almost feels like the original show again. You know, it's really kind of exciting. And to be playing Scrooge is just the best.
Well, tell us then how your journey with Scrooge has evolved, because, of course, he goes through quite a journey in the story.
I think one of the things I love about this adaptation is that it really does, it isn't just a black and white tale of redemption. It really does address the nuances as to why Scrooge is the way he is. He's a lonely old man who's been hurt. And we've managed in this version to address those scenes. So we get a sense of what it was that cumulatively happened in his life that bring him to this old curmudgeonly state where the only comfort he finds is in his own wealth. And then facing death, he does a turnaround and does everything he can to make up for the years that he'd not been appreciating Christmas for what it was. And I remember when we first got on our feet doing the show, rehearsals probably about, 3 weeks ago? I couldn't get over how I could remember, and I think the last time I had done the show was in 92. I was Fred in that production, as well as other characters, and had my share of the narration. Sort of an ensemble production that way. And I could practically recite word for word my old stuff. And when I started saying Scrooge's lines, all I could hear was John Bielenberg's voice in my head.
He was the original.
He was the original Scrooge, and he was absolutely terrific. And in fact, I talked to John on the phone the other day, and it was the first thing that came up. I said, John, I can't get your voice out of my head. It's just, it's there. I mean, by the time I'd left the show, we'd probably done a few hundred performances of it. So it's there. It's just there. It's something I have to live with. And I certainly don't mind it because John's interpretation was so nuanced and just marvelous. So it actually, I think, has helped me a lot with making my own discoveries with the show.
Brad, you played Marley.
Yeah, I did. At the Cider Mill, I did several years as Marley, probably. And then the actor who had usually played Ghost of Christmas Present had some surgery done. I did his role, then he came back, and then he left again. So, you get switched around here and there. But, I mean, I just love the story. It's such a classic tale of redemption. I mean, that's why it's been produced and done, everything from The Muppets to several movie versions to multiple script versions. And our version here that we're doing, again, written by John Buhlenberg, adapted by him, original music is funny, it's touching, it's sad, as well as hopeful. So I think that's why audiences at the Cider Mill and it's played for so many years, is because it really is just a delightful piece.
And it has a real extemporaneous feel to it, like anything can happen at any moment, including the fact that the child, who is in our production, Aiden Hart. Aiden is prevailed upon to become Tiny Tim.
Yeah, he jumps in the scenes too, and he becomes Tiny Tim in the Cratchit scenes.
And original music.
Well, one of the things I cannot do in this production that John Buhlenberg did do was, John's an accomplished violinist. So when it came to the party scene at Fezziwig's, John suddenly magically had a violin and a bow in his hand, and he played along to the dance. I couldn't even fake it if I had to.
Yeah, music was written by Sue Peters, back for the original production. So really, the Cider Mill was an extension of Binghamton University, so all of the teachers and staff up there, their idea with the Cider Mill Playhouse was to become an extension of the theater program. So as actors graduated, they could move in. Ultimately, they want to become an equity theater, so they get their equity points, get an equity card, and then move out in the world. Some things have changed over the years regarding that, but that was the original intent. So all of the actors, many of the actors, came from the university. Sue Peters was on staff there as a university music person, and she wrote all the music.
You mentioned, Bernie, about the spontaneous nature, the extemporaneous feel. How do you sustain that?
Well, part of that is with the staging and the costumes. I mean, all the costumes look like they've been taken out of the closet randomly, although they have been very specifically selected by our costume designer, Jana Kassira, who is in the show as well. Several of the actors, including Bernie and Laurie, come from Binghamton. Jana Kassira was already in the show at the Cider Mill. We also have Matt Gaska coming down from Binghamton. The rest of the actors are local actors who have never really seen the show or understand it. So it's been a process over the rehearsal here to get them in the spirit of the show, that spontaneity as you speak of, and make it look like it's happening in the moment, even though we know we've been rehearsing for months.
Yeah, part of the fun of it, and I guess the challenge for the Scranton actors is that their tendency is to want to play the classical language and to sort of step it up, but it really you've had to remind them this is you. You're basically playing yourself, who then put on different characters. So when you're speaking as a character, yes, you're in the world of Dickens in the 19th century. But during the narrations, shed the classical delivery. Just say the words. The words have their own power, but you're saying them as yourself, not as a character. The character is yourself playing these other characters or playing the narrator. But that's, I think they're finally starting to get a handle on that, that this is really just a bunch of people, adults, who happen to have found themselves in a position to relate this story to a child and his sitter, and who have to double up on the parts because not everybody's there, and everybody's sort of scrambling to figure out who's going to do what next. It runs rather seamlessly, and the conceit of the show, I think, is pretty well accepted by the audience. It's one of the things that we were amazed at when we did it the first year in 79 at the Cider Mill Playhouse in Endicott. It was just beyond anything we could have imagined. It was a great lesson for me as an actor, because you realize when something like this happens, The audience is almost like another character. They complete the cast. And when you have this, when the actors are up there and they're doing their job, and if it's a well-written piece of material, oh my God, with Dickens, how can you go wrong? The audience's imagination is drawn in. And it's that the old thing about the sum of the parts is bigger than the whole. It's very much the case. And that's one of the things I love about live theater, is that it's that act of communal imagination that just leaves people feeling like something very special just happened, and they were very much a part of it.
And Brad, then your hopes?
I hope to establish the same tradition here in Scranton that they have done up there in Binghamton for, decades. Now, they would do anywhere from 18 to 25 performances. We only have six one weekend here in Scranton, and we're performing at the theater at North. They're in their inaugural year. As you know, the North Scranton High School has been dormant for 25, 26 years. Goodwill had bought it, and they took quite a while to renovate it, and most of the classrooms in the building have become residence for the elderly. But there was this theater sitting smack dab in the middle of the building, and Jerry Langan decided he wanted to renovate that and rent it out, and they also book in their own performances there. Back in April, I was in a production of a Capella Ballet Theater Scranton there, the first time that Ballet Theater did their show there. And this is a beautiful space. And again, those were one of the things that fell into place when I started to say, hey, I could bring this production down here to Scranton. So Thursday through Sunday, December 8th through the 11th, we have a Thursday evening, 7:30, Friday evening, 7:30, a Saturday matinee at 2, Saturday evening at 7:30, a Sunday 1 o'clock matinee, and a 5 p.m. There are special children's rates. The show is children-friendly. We have children's special ticket prices on the matinees Saturday and Sunday. So go to our Facebook page. You can look up us on our Facebook page. Or go to clocktowertheater.thundertix.com. Or thetheateratnorth.com has a link as well to purchase tickets. Or you can call our box office as well, 570-703-0846, to purchase tickets.
Brad Morgan, founder and executive director of Clock Tower Theater, taking the role of Jacob Marley in this production, directing as well, and actor Bernard Burak-Sherady here to play the role of Scrooge in the Clock Tower Theater Company presentation of A Christmas Carol at the Theater at North, 1539 North Main Avenue in Scranton, December 8th, 9th, 10th, and 11th. There are shows the 8th at 7:30 and the 9th at 7:30, December 10th at 2 and 7:30, December 11th at 1 and 5, at the Theater at North, North Main Avenue in Scranton. For more information on the web, thetheateratnorth.com or clocktowertheater.thundertix.com, and that's T-I-X, clocktowertheater.thundertix.com, or the box office. You may call area code 570-703-0846. Clock Tower Theater Company presents A Christmas Carol at the Theater at North, 1539 North Main Avenue in Scranton, December 8th and 9th at 7:30 each evening, December 10th at 2 and 7:30, December 11th at 1 and 5.